Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
I hope and pray I will still be able to stay on the NDIS because at the end of the day, autistic people are getting targeted.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
From Wandering Country, I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap. Can you believe that the Farah by-election was just last weekend? It's been such a big week in federal politics, with One Nation's win, the budget, and the opposition's budget reply. We're going to unpack all of it in a moment with our Friday political panel. You'll also hear from the Liberals and Nationals on what Angus Taylor is proposing in response. Then, it was supposed to signal savings at the checkout. Whatever you want, down, down, whatever you need. Oh, bucks! A big red
hand is your savings guarantee. Every day! So get in the Coles. If you offer a discount, it must be genuine. That's the key point. This judgment raises the bar to make sure that the benefits you're talking about are actually genuine. So it will be relevant to all retailing right across the board.
Coles has been found to have misled shoppers. It's a pretty significant win in the federal court that is putting the major supermarkets on notice. The former consumer watchdog boss, Rod Sims, will be here too. From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Well, it has been such a jam-packed week of federal politics. We thought it could be helpful to kick off today's show with a look back at just what's happened. And, all right, sure, it was last week technically, but what happened on Saturday night has consumed the headlines ever since.
Pauline Hanson says One Nation is coming after seats across Australia in the wake of a stunning by-election win.
It wasn't just a fall over the line, we won it resoundingly.
This budget is ambitious in the face of adversity. It's a responsible budget and it's a reforming budget.
We have the most bold and comprehensive agenda on housing that a Commonwealth government has had in this country for 70 years.
We need to make sure that we don't say goodbye to the Australian dream this generation.
Labor promised not to change housing taxes, yet it misled.
Were those statements promises?
They were statements, and we have changed our position.
You won't say it.
Labor's budget isn't intergenerational fairness, it's intergenerational fraud.
Sadly, we've swallowed the pill that baby boomers are rich, that baby boomers are hoarding property.
A coalition will cap immigration numbers based on the number of homes constructed each year.
There's been many times when members of Labor have said to me in the last 2 years, join Labor. You'd be welcome, you'd be good, you'd be great. And now is the time to change.
The former Independent Senator Tammy Tyrrell ending the sounds of the political week after she joined the Labor Party. That was all put together by our producer, Joe Sullivan. A lot to unpack there. So we assembled our Friday political panel, Katina Curtis, the Canberra Bureau Chief for the West Australian. Also, Shane Wright, the Senior Economics Correspondent for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. They were joined by our own Stephanie Boris, our political correspondent, who Sally started with first.
Stephanie, while everyone, particularly Shane, was buried at reading the budget papers, what else was the government doing? It was an interesting day to release some other things.
Yeah, two major releases in the government's formal response to the gambling online report that was chaired by the late Peter Murphy. Now, the government can argue that they always told us they were going to release it this week. We as journos have been calling for this report for some time, so their argument, well, we've put it out there, you know, what's the problem? From a journalistic point of view and looking at this politically, it's not going to get as much coverage if it's released on budget day. It is simple as that. So that is a political decision to release it to reduce the amount of coverage that it gets. The other one that you spoke about this morning with the Health Minister, Mark Butler, was the aged care wait times. They've had this data since April, so they've had plenty of, you know, opportunities to be able to release it. They could have done it, you know, yesterday if they wanted to instead. And I found it interesting, Mark Butler almost accusing us as journalists, well, why are you focusing on the mechanics of it and not the fact that the wait lists are bad? Well, you're trying to cover something up by putting it out on budget day. It is simple as that. And that is part of the story. Of course, the wait times are appalling, and that is the bigger part of the story. But it's also about transparency and being truthful and honest. And you can sort of start to understand why people are getting fed up with politics.
Katina Curtis, last night we had the budget reply speech from the opposition leader Angus Taylor. There's plenty there to digest. Was it a traditional budget reply address, or was it something of a job interview to become the next Prime Minister?
Well, he certainly had a lot of announcements in there. So I think that probably ticks the first test that he needed to do. You know, there's been a lot of agitation from within the Liberals about why don't we have any policies yet? Well, they've got some policies now. Certainly, I think that there were expectations sort of set ahead of the day, whether it was loose lips or not, I'm not quite sure. But, you know, saying, oh, there will be things will be costings, it will be costed, there'll be offsets. Look, the biggest thing seems to have been this move to index tax breaks. The Liberals are saying that's about $22.5 billion. I jumped on the Parliamentary Budget Office's Build Your Own Budget tool yesterday to work it out for myself, since I didn't have those figures. I got about $23 billion in 4 years and $141 billion in 8 years, plus about $16 odd billion you add to the interest payments on the government debt. So I don't know that we are seeing the kinds of offsets in the sorts of things that they're scrapping that are there. I mean, Jane Hume earlier was saying, you know, oh, well, we'll get rid of the hydrogen program. Well, the government's actually scrapped most of that funding in its budget on Tuesday. Getting rid of some bureaucracies, it's not going to add up to the kind of figures that they're talking about.
Is it doable, Shane?
I think one of the bigger problems is around migration, because as soon as Tim Wilson walks into a Treasury and says, right, we're going to reduce migration, they say, right, there you go. Growth has just fallen. This is how the budget is fixed largely, because migration adds to demand. So you've reduced demand, you've reduced the size of the economy, you've reduced income tax receipts. So that hasn't been reconciled. And there's the interesting aspect with a resurrection of some sort of regional infrastructure, an infrastructure fund, which will be funded by, say, commodity prices are higher than expected, which you've outsourced a part of the budget policy to China's demand for iron ore, or Donald Trump's policies, which are influencing the price of gold. I only have to think of 2014-15, when commodity prices fell. You've actually lost control of that aspect of the budget and infrastructure spending, and it's also supposed to be paying down debt. That will be interesting to see how that is fully accounted.
How much of this speech last night was about One Nation?
Oh, a lot. Look at the fact that we had the Farah by-election less than a week ago, and that was a very safe coalition seat, and it's gone to One Nation. We had One Nation MP Barnaby Joyce last night essentially thank the coalition for taking up its policies. So the fact that One Nation is being that blunt in saying, yep, thanks guys, you're doing what we're suggesting, that you can't be clearer than that. Traditionally, when we go to a federal election here in Australia, it has been a fight between the two major parties, the Labor, a Labor government, a coalition government. Now, it looks like the fight is more between the coalition and One Nation. The coalition is desperate to get voters back that have gone to One Nation, and they have gone harder, I think, than most of us expected with their migration policies. Even when Angus Taylor initially announced some of his migration policy elements about a month ago, there was a hint of this idea of what he was going to do with the welfare and making people wait longer, but there wasn't the expectation they'd go as far as putting that into place with, you know, only allowing people onto welfare if they're Australian citizens. Now, we were talking about fully costed, offsetting the tax changes. Angus Taylor has said by changing the welfare system so it can only be Australian citizens, that will save billions. A little cheeky, like we don't actually have a number. It's just this vague, oh, it'll save billions over what period? Oh, we'll tell you more later. If you're putting out a policy as drastic as this, you need to show us what the numbers are as well.
I feel for poor migrants. If you go back to, say, 2013, they were clogging up the roads out to Western Sydney. Peter Dutton, they were accounting for crime, the crime gangs of Melbourne. Now they've been accused of adding to house prices. They're blowing out the welfare bill and the budget.
But they also help in our hospitals, they help build homes, they help after the childcare sector.
They'll be building all these homes that we need as well.
Well, even David Farley was saying they needed more migrants down in
Farah. They absolutely do in Farah. I was there, and all you would hear from farmers is that they need those holiday workers. Figures-wise, which I think is always important to look at, I'm sure you appreciate figures, Shane.
I do appreciate figures. Thanks,
Steph. So the Coalition has been talking about the fact that there's a number of people that aren't Australian citizens on welfare. If you look at the age pension, nearly 93% are Australian citizens. So it's a really small amount that aren't Australian citizens on this. For youth allowance, 97.3% are Aussies.
Stephanie Boris there with Katina Curtis and Shane Wright. Well, as we've been hearing, the federal opposition leader has pledged to give Australians bigger tax cuts to help keep pace with inflation. He's also vowing to make one of the biggest slashes to migration in Australian history. Now, this morning, Sally spoke with the Deputy Opposition Leader, Liberal Senator Jane Hume, and she started broad.
Angus Taylor has asked Australians to begin to believe again. How much work does the Coalition have to do to win back voters, in your view?
Well, I think last night was very important for Angus Taylor and indeed the whole Coalition team. We presented a plan for a freer, fairer and better Australia, more importantly. The last 4 years have been tough in opposition, but we want to make sure that people can see that we are a genuine alternative, offering a credible plan to make their lives better in the future. People have seen their standard of living go backwards so far and so fast under Labor. They're rightly aggrieved. I can understand why voters are angry. What they want to see from an opposition is not just holding a government to account, but providing that genuine policy alternative. That's what we saw last night.
There are a number of ideas and elements to the speech last night. I was just speaking to the Health Minister, Mark Butler, particularly about this idea that a number of welfare provisions, 17 or so, will only be reserved for Australian citizens rather than permanent residents. What does a permanent resident do, for example, if they have a catastrophic medical incident and they become disabled?
Well, I should first be very clear that health is off the table. You will always have Medicare, you will always have aged care. And it doesn't apply to anybody that's a permanent resident now. This is really about future
permanent
migrants.
Residents in the future?
Well, this is about future migrants. We want to make sure that if you're a permanent resident and you want to become a citizen, so much the better. We'd like to see more people on the pathway to citizenship, because if you commit to this country, then we will commit to you. But I think a lot of Australians would be surprised to know that some of these benefits, some very expensive and very generous benefits, are available to permanent residents now.
So permanent residents are people that the government has said you can stay permanently. Mm. If someone were to have a catastrophic accident, they would have access to Medicare. But for ongoing supports like NDIS, once these new rules came in, if you were to win government, how would people fund themselves if something like that happens? They're permanent residents but not yet citizens.
Yeah, I think the counterfactual is really important here too, Sally. If Australians went and lived in a different country, and even if they did so permanently but refused to give up their Australian citizenship, well, would they expect other countries to fund them and pay for their welfare benefits? And I think that it's not unreasonable for Australians to expect that the people that we are giving these very generous benefits to, and we are an extraordinarily generous country, should be citizens. They should be committing to us in the same way that we're committing to them.
How much will it cost to automatically index income tax brackets to inflation? How much will that cost the budget bottom line? What's the figure?
Well, I think we've said explicitly that over the forwards it's about $22.5 billion, and that has been fully costed and offset in our budget in reply. But again, let me give you the counterfactual here. If you don't index the tax brackets to inflation, well, then Australian taxpayers will continue to pay more and more to the government. I mean, I think this is the dirty little secret that the government never wants to tell you. Governments benefit from inflation because Australians get pay rises, they move into a higher tax bracket and they pay more tax. And in fact, the Labor government's only solution to paying down debt and deficit was to sit back and let bracket creep do all the hard work. That's until Tuesday night when they announced new and higher taxes on removing negative gearing and capital gains tax discounts, which will also go to pay.
So how do you pay for it? That's the price tag. How do you pay for it?
Well, we've announced a number of ways that we are going to make sure that spending in particular is reduced when we are in government. Well, there's an awful lot of corporate welfare out there that we want to see wound back,
particularly,
how about investments in green hydrogen? We think that that's been a terrible waste of money.
Would that get you $22 billion?
Well, that's not all. There is also an enormous amount of bureaucracy that's being built up around housing, the Housing Australia Future Fund, which isn't building any houses. In fact, it's specifically said that next year there was going to be nil houses built from the Housing Australia Future Fund, which is just mind-blowing. And of course, there's an awful lot of green bureaucracy as well, a new EPA, a net zero authority. There just seems to be agency after agency after agency, and that money could be used to be doing better things, like putting more money back in the pockets of hardworking Australians who are paying too much tax and are seeing their purchasing power go backwards because of endlessly rising inflation.
Deputy Opposition Leader, Liberal Senator Jane Hume there. So Angus Taylor also said last night that a coalition government would make the biggest migration cut in Australian history. This morning, Sally put that to the coalition's junior partner, Nationals leader Senator Matt Canavan, and she asked him what figure he would like to see the net overseas migration rate actually at.
Well, I want to see a figure that's calibrated to the needs of the Australian people, in particular the number of homes we're building every year, because if we don't have enough homes for people, we shouldn't take more people in. We can see the consequence of that ourselves, all of us, in particularly major cities, but even in regional centres like mine in Rockhampton, you're seeing the shocking situation of people having to live in tents. And I just can't understand why the government won't act here. They're being completely ignorant of the views of the Australian people. Clearly, the Australian people want a reduction in migration so that Australians can have a roof over their head. And yet this budget this week increases immigration again. It's already at record levels. And the Labor Party is just completely ignoring the will of the Australian people. And that's why you're getting a backlash. That's why you're getting anger from people, because they see in Canberra a government that is not representing them.
Do you agree that certain welfare provided by government should only be provided to Australian citizens, not to permanent residents and others?
Well, absolutely. I think it's just common sense. Now, we've said we're not kicking anyone off. All right? So if you've come here under those rules, you'll maintain access to the age pension, to other welfare programs. But there'll be a new rule. We're saying a new rule going forward. If you come to Australia going forward, you'll only qualify for this generosity, and we're very generous, if you commit to Australia, if you commit to us, if you become a naturalised Australian citizen. I think that's a common sense principle, and particularly given the budget pressures we're facing.
If permanent residents are paying tax, should they not be entitled to services that come from those taxes?
Well, our obligation is to the Australian people first, and someone who's not an Australian citizen is not an Australian. So we look after Australians first. That's our principle. And in an environment where the government says it has to slash private insurance rebates to Australian pensioners. I've spoken to people. I mentioned one last night, Mary, in my budget reply speech. Mary, and spoke to her in Albury. She doesn't know what she's going to do. She's facing over $500 increase in her private health insurance payment as a pensioner, as an Australian. And this government heartlessly says, no, you've got to cop it, Mary, because we've got to keep paying welfare for the millions of people we've brought in from overseas.
One Nation MP Barnaby Joyce has thanked the coalition, saying Angus Taylor's budget reply speech basically reads off the One Nation script. Are your policies an attempt to win back voters who have put their support behind One Nation?
Not at all. I mean, what Angus announced, we announced last night, is we are going to end Barnaby Joyce's net zero agenda. It was Barnaby Joyce that brought in net zero. I was there. I tried to fight against it. I tried to fight against him, but he put his foot down and he did a deal with Scott Morrison, and he was the vice captain of net zero. He was deputy prime minister when it came in. So I don't know if Barnaby's apologised yet, but I stuck to my guns. I said this was insane from day one, and the whole world is woken up now. It's unfortunately taken a terrible Middle East crisis for the penny to drop. But we now have the absurd situation with a government that says it's committed to net zero is running around the world subsidising the oil production in foreign countries. They've taken a chequebook of your government, of your money, and just writing blank checks to nations all through the Asia-Pacific region to buy the very thing they think we should be shutting down, that is fossil fuels.
And that is the Nationals leader, Senator Matt Canavan, ending our budget coverage for the week.
It is very timely for all retailers to ensure that they make accurate pricing and discount claims.
And that's the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission Chair, Gina Cascott-Lieb, speaking yesterday after a really significant federal court ruling that Coles had broken the law by misleading consumers. Judge Michael O'Brien yesterday found that in 13 of the 14 sample discount tickets that had been submitted to the court for judgment, the discount wasn't genuine. This is a huge breakthrough legal win for the ACCC, which, as you heard from the consumer watchdog head, has put all grocery retailers on notice. Rod Sims is the most recent boss of the consumer watchdog, and he joined Sally this morning and explained why it's such an important ruling.
Oh, look, I think it's extremely significant. I think it's a great win for consumers because the takeaway is that if you offer a discount, it must be genuine. That's the key point. Because companies, you know, they're always suggesting the consumers are getting a good deal in this way or that way. This judgment raises the bar to make sure that the benefits you're talking about are actually genuine. So it will be relevant to all retailing right across the board.
So what's been found in this case? So what's Coles been caught doing exactly?
So prices would often stay the same for a long time. Then they would go up for a short time and then they would come down a bit and that would be held to be a discount, even though the price they came down to was higher than the price they'd been at for a long time. And so the judge found that that was really a fake discount, a contrived discount, because you're actually paying more than you were not very long ago, and to call that a discount was just not right.
What does it expose about pricing practices here?
Well, I mean, companies try to use discounts all the time. Different companies in different sectors, they know that consumers are tempted by a discount. People are in a hurry. Companies are always trying to do this. So what it says is that we really want to make sure that what you're saying is genuine. And, you know, companies do need to be constrained in this sort of way. They're out there to make a buck. They're trying to push the limits pretty well all the time because they're trying to get consumers to buy their product. And so that's why consumer law is so important, to put boundaries around what they can do and what they can't do, because we want consumers, when they get told it's a discount, for it actually to be a discount, not some sham discount.
A penalty in this case, Rod, will be awarded at a later date. The ACCC says it will argue for a substantial sum beyond what could be claimed as the cost of doing business. What kind of number could we be talking about here?
Oh, look, that's always tricky. When I started at the ACCC in 2011, the highest consumer penalty we got was $1 million. When I left, we'd got it up to $150 million. The government has actually increased the statutory limit on what penalties can be in the meantime. So it's really getting the courts comfortable with higher and higher penalties. Now, look, I really don't want to put a number on it, but the real test is whether when that penalty comes out, people say, ooh, that's going to hurt, or on the one hand, or do they say, oh, that's just nothing, they won't even notice it. So it has to be something that the company notices and it sends a signal to others that this is actually a really important matter.
Rod Sims, the most recent boss of the consumer watchdog, the ACCC, ending today's episode of The Breakfast Wrap, our very last for the week. It has been a huge week of federal politics. Thank you so much for sticking with us and listening to all of those interviews from Sally Sarah. They were produced by our crack Radio National Breakfast team, many of whom worked long hours on budget day to bring you the best analysis the next morning. You can find all of that analysis on ABC Listen, including segments about some of the budget stories you may have missed, and interviews with various sectors, from the Anti-Poverty Centre, the Australian Council of Social Service, previewing the budget, also from farmers and small business groups. All of that on ABC Listen. Today's Breakfast Wrap was produced by Grace Stranger. Our executive producer is Eleni Saltis, and I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon. See you on Monday.